everybody's maturity, thinking capacity, the way we process information, the way we do things is different from a different generation perspective. Now, how do we work with each other is an important thing in the workplace, because those things have caused conflict in the workplace as well.
Welcome to the Business Behind Your Business, conversations to help your business grow and thrive. Hi, I'm Paul Sweeney, founder of Pretium Solutions, chartered accountants and certified business advisors, hosting the Business Behind Your Business. Welcome to the Business Behind Your Business, and today we're exploring this situation that's now become, I guess, more normal, or the new normal, as people are loving to call it, where we have working from home becoming more and more acceptable, and less people working from an office environment with close interactions with their colleagues. So we now have this working from home. So we see this more distant, more independent, probably less socially engaged, or even maybe more socially engaged, depending on the company you're working for. We have this situation of working from home. Now, one of the issues that's come up quite regularly is this whole idea of how do you manage your remote workforce, and how do you maintain that they are actually engaged and able to continue to give their best to your business, their best while they're working from home in that environment with all the distractions. And this idea of emotionally intelligent employees is become it's more of a hot topic at the moment as well, when we look at how we keep our employees engaged and how we interact with them on a day-to-day basis in this remote environment. And look, to help us explore that, we've got Raj Nathu from Keystone Active Learning here today. So, Raj, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back again with you.
That's great. So last time we had a great conversation. So I encourage you to go back and check out that episode as well. If you've missed any of our previous episodes, then subscribe or follow us in your favorite podcast player, and you'll be able to see the back list or the back library of episodes that we've already discussed, and you'll be able to catch up on Raj's previous conversation with us. But this whole idea, Raj, of emotional intelligence, so we've got people who are knowledgeable, they're intelligent, we've hired them for particular skills that they've got, but getting successful outcomes from employees in a remote environment where we don't have that day-to-day social engagement or interaction is becoming a tricky situation and needs some careful management. So there must be a set of skills that would help in getting the best outcomes, getting the best relationships with your employees in this remote environment. And look, I think we call this emotional intelligence, but I think that's one of those phrases that people are throwing out there without fully understanding what they are actually referring to. So can you give us a bit of a background what we mean when we're talking about emotional intelligence?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Paul. Emotional intelligence, in fact, in itself is a skill set that is looked upon today as very important for workplace success. And it's made up of a few factors that we now have collectively called emotional intelligence. But just to give a bit about context and history on emotional intelligence. So it first came to the fore when, Peter Salovey and John Mayer back in the 90s, they first introduced this concept called emotional intelligence. But nothing happened with that after that until 1995, around about there, when Daniel Goleman published this article in the Harvard Business Review called Emotional Intelligence and Why It Matters More Than Your IQ. And to date, 25 years later almost, that article is still one of the most downloaded articles on the Harvard Business Review. Imagine. So over the years, more and more organizations have taken on to this concept of emotional intelligence. And to give it some kind of definition, emotional intelligence is defined as our capacity to be aware of, control, and express our own emotion, and how we use that emotion during our interpersonal relationships, so that we come across empathetically with understanding. So basically, you know, emotional intelligence is made up of these five skills or components. Your self-awareness, that is your ability to recognize your own personal emotions and the triggers, your emotional triggers and your limitations. So that's number one. Number two is your self-regulation, the ability to manage emotions so that you don't have a negative effect on other people. The third one is motivation. This is the inner drive that you have, you know, the personal joy that you experience during and whenever you accomplish something. The fourth one is empathy, the ability to recognize, understand, and experience the emotions of another person, which is totally different to sympathy. And the last one is your social skills, which is critically important. The ability to interact, negotiate, and work with other people so that you can find the best way forward. You know, there's a quote that goes around which is quite popular, and it says, your IQ will get your foot in the door, but your EQ will get you promoted. Or another quote that goes around quite popular is, your IQ gets you through school, but your EQ gets you through your life, EQ being your emotional intelligence. So, you know, basically that is emotional intelligence.
Mm. And I think given what we're experiencing working from home and working in distance from our colleagues, from our managers, our business owners, there is, I guess, a greater need to be aware of these things. So there's a couple of things, like you mentioned that list there. And I'm thinking these whole idea of what are the triggers. We've got a lot of triggers which are beyond our control at the moment, and you know, we can't control. So we've you know, another hotspot developed, and we've got a lockdown coming up. And how do we respond? We have to adjust our process and managing our emotional response to that, particularly when we're interacting with you know, our colleagues, our employees, our customers.
Yeah.
And empathy is becoming a big one, because we are dealing with employees and suppliers and customers who their situation, you know, there's loss, grief, despair in a lot of cases. So how do we deal with that in an empathetic way? And this is really a challenge for a lot of people. I know there's been some criticism of business leaders in the past for being really distant and treating employees quite harshly you know, without any empathy. Is this a real challenge, I think, in a remote environment where we're not having that face-to-face and you can't see the day-to-day what's going on with the employee. So you're not seeing those obvious signs. So how does this going to apply to a manager or a business owner managing a remote workforce in this situation?
Yeah. No, it's actually you hit the nail on the head in a sense there, Paul. It's strangely enough, just a couple of weeks ago, I was doing some training with a financial services organization, and this whole issue of emotional triggers came up. Well, we were doing a whole session on emotional intelligence, just to put some perspective to this. And one of the participants actually said, well, you know, I don't really believe in all this fluff. and so I sort of left it at that and to see where it goes as the session goes on. And so as a session drawn on, and we actually came to this topic on emotional triggers. And so I asked him, I said, tell me, Tony, what actually you know, pees you off in your workplace? And he says, well, you know, if people don't give me things in a specific manner, if they give me information in a haphazard way, not specific order, not properly labeled or on time or things like that, those things really anger me. So I said, well, that is emotional intelligence. That's your emotional trigger. Now, other people around you need to have that empathy to know how they need to communicate with you. And that's what we're talking about in terms of our interpersonal relationships and communication styles with each other. So these things, you know, have always been there, but we're not aware of them. And now that we've become aware of it as a science, emotional intelligence is proven to be an integral part of workplace interpersonal relationships. So who does it really apply to, in a sense? You know, it applies to everybody in the workplace because communication is an integral part of what we do every single day, whether we're talking with our internal clients or talking to our external clients. Communication is a core feature of everything that we do. Now, having empathy for the person you're speaking to or speaking with is critical. If you're in a customer service role, for argument's sake, you need to know that person who's calling you, what their pain points are, and what their situation is. A simple example, my wife works for an insurance company, and if a client calls in to put in a claim, given, say, for instance, the floods that are taking place, as a customer service consultant, you've got to have a high level of empathy to understand that person's distress and stress that they're going through at the moment. Because you've got to be able to put yourself in their situation that they just lost all their belongings right now. And they want to put in a claim because they want to be restored to a level of comfort that they were before the flood. So that requires high level of emotional intelligence for you to be able to do that. Because as a customer service consultant, you're going to get a lot of calls because of the situation that has just happened right now. But you need to manage that stress, which is another factor or component of emotional intelligence, stress tolerance. So as a customer service consultant, you got to manage your stress, but at the same time, be empathetic to the person that that you are communicating with and understand their situation.
Mm. So the situation you've just discussed about the insurance claims, particularly at the moment with the stressful situations a lot of people are under, is that something that organizations don't do enough training for? Don't spend enough time or invest in new employees when yeah. they're coming on board to the organization? They don't invest that time in training them how to be empathetic, how to understand their customer, how to understand the social or the triggers that those people are coming through. Is that a problem for organizations?
Yeah, you know, sadly, in Australia, we organizations have not widely adopted the science of using emotional intelligence when they're recruiting people or when they're trying to identify where the gaps are within their current team or staff or employees. In the USA, who obviously they are the forefront of this, organizations such as MetLife, even the United States Air Force, L'Oreal, Revlon, these organizations have used it extensively in their recruitment phase. So take MetLife, which is the world's largest life insurer. They use it at the recruitment phase where they say, for instance, brokers. For a broker to be able to sell life insurance, they got to have high levels of empathy because when you are communicating with a potential client, you got to understand what that client's situation is and what kind of insurance they will need for their beneficiaries. Because once a purchaser has bought the insurance policy and they pass on, they're trying to make sure that the people that are going to benefit from that insurance policy are going to have a degree or level of comfort that they would like them to have, right? So as a broker, insurance broker selling this policy, you got to be patient, understanding, and empathetic to those particular client's needs. So MetLife, what they actually did was they actually ran a emotional intelligence quiz among all the existing brokers. And they found that the brokers that were the top sell, the ones that sold the most policies were those that had high levels of empathy and emotional intelligence in their scores, whereas those that had low levels of emotional intelligence and low levels of empathy tended to not stay long in their particular job role, and they also sold less insurance policies. So, you know, that's just one example. I mean, the United States Air Force is another phenomenal case study where they saved millions of dollars in their recruitment simply by using emotional intelligence as a factor as part of the recruitment phase.
Mm. So there's a financial side to this as well. So you just hinted on the dollars saved by getting your recruitment right, by not having that churn in employees. And employee turnover is a big cost to businesses everywhere. Huge cost as a percentage of your overall costs and your revenue. Yeah. And I guess the other side of it that you've talked about there is this whole idea of the, particularly in that sales environment, and life insurance is a key example, is that need to show empathy, that the more connection you had and the empathy you show to your potential customer, the more likely you are to convert that prospect to a sale, and that improves the profitability of the business. But look, I think there are plenty of other business examples where we're not dealing with such a sensitive topic as insurance or defense. But you know, you look at somebody, give an example, say of a tradesman, when somebody rings up and they have something urgently needing fixing in their house, there's a couple of different ways that you can respond to that phone call.
The thing with tradies also is that they have to also know that every job that comes to them may not be a job that they can actually do, and they might need to actually refer that job to someone else who's also maybe a better expert, or maybe they're not capable of doing it right now simply because they are inundated with work and they can't cope. So they need to know how to say no. But I think the higher level of emotional intelligence comes about when you actually tell that client, I'm sorry, I can't do it, but I can refer you to Paul, who may be available right now, and these are these contact details. And a classic example of that would be back in the USA, again, a company called Zappos, who is the world's largest online shoe retailer. And the Zappos call center have this policy of engaging with clients in a friendly, happy way. And happiness is another factor of emotional intelligence. And one particular case study from Zappos is that when the CEO, who's late now, but the CEO was actually in New York for a conference, and late at night they headed back to the hotel room, and they were hungry after quite a few drinks, closer to midnight or maybe even beyond midnight. And he called the desk downstairs and said, "We want to order room service." And they said, "No, we don't have room service at this hour of the night." So he said, "Well, can't you recommend a place where we can find food?" And so she said, "No." And he said, "Well, you know, our call center is in Las Vegas. We're in New York. And I bet you that if you have to call the Zappos call center in Las Vegas and ask them where I can find food here in New York, and this is my address, they'll be able to tell me." And so she took on the challenge, and she actually phoned the Zappos call center. And the call center operator obviously was a bit bemused, but nevertheless, he said, "Well, hold on. The address you are, if you go, you know, a couple of 100 meters in this direction or that direction, you'll get a pizza takeaway or you'll get a hamburger place or whatever the case may be." But he was able to tell her from Las Vegas where to go to find food, and yet she's in New York, and she couldn't do that for her own patron in that hotel. And this is what we're talking about, emotional intelligence, that if you have high levels of happiness, which leads on to emotional intelligence, you're going to come across as positive to your client, as optimistic to your client. And so you may not get that business from the client at that particular time, when or potential client, but the fact that you've actually referred them to someone else, that wins you a high level of credibility and trust with that person. And they'll probably come back to you in future if they need help, where you can actually offer them that particular help.
Mm. And that raises a few other things there, Raj. So obviously that employee that was unhelpful wouldn't be doing their prospects of getting promoted in their current role any help through that, particularly when I know hotels get a lot of get feedback from customers about how was your experience. But the other side of it there is you've got this issue about how do you make sure that you hire the right employees who are engaged and adopt the values of your business, the values of your culture. Look, I think that's probably a conversation in its own. And then the other side of that is we see a lot of, some friction between different generations of employer and employee, and that managing that cycle, that intergenerational conflict is something that a lot of business owners struggle with. I know your colleague Rita Mora has some good advice in that aspect, and we're hoping to talk to Rita soon about that. So, but just coming back to this whole idea, like, you know, we think that as an employee that my actions are not that, well, they don't matter at times, but really they do.
Oh, yeah, they do. Look, I mean, firstly, you know, you're absolutely correct. We are going through a period in where we have some workplaces have up to five generations of people, different generations of people working in the same environment. Everybody's maturity, thinking capacity, the way we process information, the way we do things is different from a different generation perspective. Now, how do we work with each other is an important thing in the workplace, because those things have caused conflict in the workplace as well. And there's no way that we can avoid conflict. But the question is, how do we manage that conflict? What do we do with that conflict? And that's where emotional intelligence comes in, that what is my ability to manage my own emotions and make sure that I understand what the emotions are of the other person and make sure that I still am able to have a positive interpersonal relationship with this person, because I'm going to be working with this person all the time, rather than to have a conflict situation where you don't want to come to work because of the work, because of the toxic work environment. Neither does the other person. So people start leaving because managers don't take action. And this is where we ask ourselves that what are the specific areas that managers need to be strong in to be able to manage their team from an emotional intelligence perspective. And through research, we've identified four areas where managers and leaders need to be very strong. Number one is that they have to be able to communicate the vision of their department and the organization. So firstly, the vision of where the organization is going, and then the vision of the department in the context of the vision of the organization. And this is critically important today in these COVID times, in this pandemic times, because people tend to work remotely. And if the vision of the organization, the goals of the organization are not continuously communicated to people working from home, working remotely, coming seldom to the or coming even once or twice a week to the office only, they lose touch of where the organization is going. And right now, you know, if we bring Maslow's hierarchy of needs into context here, a lot of people are looking for job security. They're at the bottom of Maslow's pyramid. They're looking for job security. So they want that constant assurance from management that, you know, everything's okay and that everyone's job is safe. Or we might go into reduced hours, or we might all take a pay cut, but everyone will still have some kind of a job. And, you know, taking on from your previous podcast, Paul, on the end of JobKeeper, this is even more critical going forward from 1st of April onwards, where JobKeeper is no longer there, and there's so much of uncertainty about what the future holds in store for small business, especially that have just a few employees. Everyone's looking for that kind of assurance. So that's number one in terms of communicating a vision and giving them that assurity that everything's going to be okay. Or telling them quite honestly that, look, you know, we may have to make people redundant and it's better that you start looking for another job. So that's where the second one comes into play, and that is authenticity. Management have to be authentic. They have to do what they actually say they're going to do, rather than doing the opposite and then losing that integrity and trust with their workforce. The third one is the ability of managers and leaders to coach their teams, to coach their staff. So in order to do that, managers and leaders have to firstly be coachable. They have to accept the fact that, you know what, I might need some coaching or training from a professional. And once I know how to coach, I'm going to be able to coach my team. Because look, your team looks up to you for direction. And if you're going to say, I don't know how, they don't know how either. So you have to be able to coach them. And then the last or fourth factor that we look at in terms of managers and leaders from an emotional intelligence perspective is their ability to be innovative, the ability to solve problems, to make decisions. Now, you know, we use a number of psychometric assessments as part of our coaching. And one of them is called the Core Competency Index, where we look at 25 different skills that you should have. It doesn't matter what kind of job role you perform. And one of those 25 factors is decision making. And sadly enough, from the hundreds of assessments we've run, decision making always comes at the bottom third of the list. And that is because people tend to procrastinate a lot. They tend to not be decisive when given important things to do or important decisions to make. They want to drag things along, maybe even pass the buck to another person rather than take on that task or risk of making a decision on a particular situation.
Mm-hmm. So look, it's not emotional intelligence is not really a skill that's taught through, it doesn't seem to be taught through the school system or the university system, but
no.
Is it teachable? Is it something that a new employee can learn, or an old employee, an old business leader, can they still learn at this stage?
Yeah. On the first part of your question, definitely emotion intelligence is not taught certainly not at a school level, and definitely not in a university level. The great thing about emotional intelligence is that it's gaining more and more popularity. So the Australian Skills Authority have actually introduced emotional intelligence as part of their Diploma of Leadership and Management course. So emotional intelligence is a core new unit in that particular diploma. Universities are starting to talk about it, and they have, I've seen instances where professionals have gone to talk to students about emotional intelligence, but no one's gone to the extent of actually getting individuals to score their own level of emotional intelligence and let them understand that, okay, these are my strengths, these are my gaps, and these are the things I need to do to strengthen them. So emotional intelligence is definitely learnable, to answer the second part of your question, but it's important that you first sort of identify where am I strong or weak at? And there are a couple of telltale signs of gaps of emotional intelligence. Certain things like constantly criticizing other people for their mistakes, or refusing to accept personal responsibility for your own errors, or always playing the role of the victim rather than being a victor and taking responsibility and accountability. You rather be the victim and blame everyone else around you for everything that's happened to you. So another thing about low emotional intelligence is not taking feedback well from other people. So that could be another one of them. Or if you're working within a team environment, not willing to be a team player. That's another identifier of low emotional intelligence. So, and then how do we overcome these? Well, one of these is, firstly, if you do the quiz, then you identify those areas where you need actual training on. And a quiz is simple. It's a simple quiz. It just takes 30 minutes, but it gives you a wealth of information about yourself in detail that helps you to focus on those areas where you need actual attention. And those are the things that will actually drive your career to another level. So things like paying attention to your behavior and becoming more self-aware of triggers that actually cause you to become a bit more upset or angry, and how you can manage those triggers in a better way. how to react in a more positive way, in a way as well, how to put yourself in another person's shoes as well when you communicating with them, to think before you act, in a way, and to be more self-aware of your feelings when you're speaking to other people, so that you come across in a positive way. There's a platinum rule of communication, and that is that to communicate with other people the way they would like you to communicate with them. And this platinum rule surpasses the golden rule, which is treat other people the way you would like to be treated. That's no longer the way we should be communicating. We should be communicating in the way other people would like us to communicate with them.
Mm-hmm. There's some powerful stuff there, Raj. So just recapping on what we've been talking about, we've explored what emotional intelligence is, and we've looked at how it applies to pretty much everybody in your organization.
Yeah.
And, it applies to every role in every interaction you have with an employee or a colleague or a customer or a supplier. So it's a critical thing. So I guess the other question that remains to be answered, and I think we have already answered it, is why do we need it to be successful? And I think you've given some good examples already, but you just want to cap up for
And before I answer that question, I'll actually, because you said it applies to various roles, I actually just jotted down on a piece of paper quickly a couple of roles with five emotional intelligence factors for each of those roles that are critical for you to be successful in that role. And the first one I've written down, Paul, is for you as an accountant. So the five emotional intelligence factors that you need to be successful as an accountant are problem solving, interpersonal relationships, happiness, self-regard, and emotional self-awareness. If you're a financial advisor, the five emotional intelligence factors that you'll need are assertiveness, interpersonal relations, problem-solving, happiness, and empathy. If you're in a customer service role, stress tolerance, assertiveness, happiness, interpersonal relationships, and self-actualization. And if you're a public servant, for argument's sake, you're in optimism, self-actualization, self-regard, independence, and assertiveness. But to achieve overall job success, the five factors that are extremely important from an emotional intelligence perspective is self-actualization, which basically is being willing to help other people achieve their goals, because those will help you achieve your goals as well. So that's number one. Number two is being happy in your role and spreading that happiness to other people as well. Number three is being optimistic in your role. Number four is having self-regard. And number five is being assertive. So those are five critical areas of emotional intelligence that apply to overall work success. Now, they basically also then answer, partly answer your question as well in terms of what you need to be successful. And I've got a much more comprehensive list. And if anybody wants that list from me, I'm happy to share it with me. I've identified about 15 to 20 different job roles. And for each of those roles, I've identified five emotional intelligence factors that apply to each of those job roles. And I'm happy to share that with anyone. You can call me on 0431-055-949, and I'll email that list to you once you give me a call.
That'd be great. So, Raj, we'll put a link to that where they can contact you to get that list in our show notes. But we might also put a link to some of the other resources that we've discussed. So that article by Harvard Business Review.
Yeah.
And also you mentioned the core competency quiz. Is that available through the Keystone website?
So that's available from us as well, the Core Competency Index. It's a skill set. It's a quiz that you do. It takes about 15 to 30 minutes, and it gives you your score on 25 different skills that apply to almost every role that you can think of doing or fulfilling. Yeah.
Great. Fantastic. So that's been really helpful to go through and hear you explain what emotional intelligence is and how it actually, with some practical examples, how it actually benefits you as a business owner, but also as an employee, and how it's important to have emotional intelligence to improve your chances of being successful. And we're looking for every aspect of running our business today that can give us a benefit or an advantage and help us be more successful and provide a long-term successful business. And also one that we really enjoy doing. There's no point turning up to a business if it's a hard slog and you're not enjoying it and it's not delivering financial rewards. So
exactly, yeah.
And so, Raj, we'll put your contact details in the show notes. As always, you can contact us on podcast@thebusinessbehindyourbusiness.com and reach out to us with any questions you might have. And look, if there's questions you have for Raj, we're happy to pass them on. And you can also engage with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So, Raj, thank you again for your time today. It's been wonderful to have you back on the podcast. I've learned heaps, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. And as always, reach out to us and Raj for more information. Or if you've got any questions, happy to help. So, Raj, thank you again.
Only a pleasure, Paul. Thanks, and I hope to see you soon again in the future.
Fantastic.
Thanks for listening. Do you have a question you'd like our team of experts to answer? If you do, send your question to podcast@thebusinessbehindyourbusiness.com. To hear more from The Business Behind Your Business, don't forget to subscribe using your favourite podcast player. Or you can visit the businessbehindyourbusiness.com website.